Welcome to AgriPulse Newsmakers, where we aim to take you to the heart of ag policy. I'm your host, Lydia Johnson. This week's guest is Illinois Democratic Congressman Eric Sorensen, a member of the House Ag Committee. He joins us to discuss reconciliation, downsizing at USDA, and opportunities for biofuels. But first, here's this week's headlines. Farmers are feeling slightly more optimistic despite continued uncertainty over President Trump's tariff plans. According to the latest Ag Economy Barometer from Purdue University and the CME Group, overall farmer sentiment rose by 8 points last month. 70% of those surveyed say the president's use of tariffs will strengthen the country's agricultural economy in the long run. However, 56% say those tariffs will have a negative impact on their farm's income this year and will make it more difficult for them to get needed inputs. Ag Secretary Brooke Rollins says USDA will unveil its reorganization plan next week, and it won't be as drastic as many have feared. USDA says about 15,000 employees have taken buyouts since President Trump took office. She notes the department usually loses between 8 and 10,000 employees each year. Rollins said there are no plans to cut any Farm Service Agency staff or Forest Service wildland firefighters. And finally, House Ag Committee Republicans have been negotiating a package of spending cuts to include in the sweeping budget reconciliation bill. Cuts from nutrition assistance could help pay for some top priorities for farmers, including increased spending on commodity programs and crop insurance. But the committee doesn't have an easy task. The Ag Committee is required to cut a net $230 billion in spending over 10 years. We asked House Ag Committee member Representative Eric Sorensen why he is opposed to the proposal to cut SNAP benefits in reconciliation.
Well, look, I mean, we're coming out of a pandemic where, you know, the worst thing that has happened in my community that continues to happen is the high cost of food. You go to the grocery store and it's not just that a dozen eggs spiked up. It's that the cost of everything, more and more people are having a tough time today. I don't think this is the time to be playing around with people's ability to be fed, for their ability to eat. SNAP is a basic needs program in many of our communities. And in my district, our average income is less than $50,000 a year. My district is not Chicago. My district is rural. And this affects our rural communities. And I'll tell you what, we need to do everything that we can to make sure that people can live in the small towns if your population size says 5,000 or less. And understanding that in our rural hometowns, the cost of food is even higher than it is if you're connected to a town big enough to have a Walmart.
And Republicans want to use the savings from cutting SNAP to increase spending for commodity programs and crop insurance. You know, wouldn't that still be good for the farmers in your district and the farmers across rural America?
Yeah, and I talk with our farmers and our producers, and, you know, they want to be solvent, but they don't want to be solvent as they see people become hungry. That's not a solution to them. And I think that's one of the bedrocks that we have. You know, just as Americans, we care for one another, you know, and I'm all about finding where there's waste, where there's fraud, where there's abuse in the system. I think we should find that every single day, but also understanding that the producers in my district, I say that this is the capital of agriculture, where we're the home of Deere and Company. There's still 64,000 families that rely on SNAP, and we need to make sure that that safety net doesn't go away.
You were one of four Democrats to vote for the Farm Bill passed by the House Ag Committee last Congress. Do you think that Chairman Thompson can find enough votes for a full Farm Bill later this Congress after dividing the Farm Bill coalition in reconciliation?
Well, look, one of the things that was a benefit when I voted yes for the GOP Farm Bill, it opened up the dialogue. I got to know Chairman G.T. Thompson. I know him to be a good man. I know him to be one that wants to do what's right by producers all across the country. You know, he believes in agriculture as much as anybody else, right? And so one thing that I hope doesn't happen is that we have the extremists in their party take hold of this, decide that they're going to take out pieces out of the Farm Bill, throw it into reconciliation, push it on through, and then there's nothing left. You know, the case in point here is we need to make sure that this five-year Farm Bill never gets pushed down again. We need to make sure that it's a five-year Farm Bill and it always gets done. But I don't want to see the value be taken out of it. Because if the value gets taken out of the farm bill, then there won't be the consensus. We won't be forced to work together anymore. If that just gets taken out and now there's always this mechanism to do it in a very partisan way, that doesn't do us any good. And it wouldn't do us any good if the Democrats were in control either, right? You know, so we need to make sure that we keep a farm bill that is valuable, that we're going to make sure is bipartisan. We get that through the House. And I'm optimistic that if we do that, I'll be able to vote for it again. And so it's my hope that the chairman does that.
We'll be back with more from Congressman Eric Sorensen right after this.
These are the farmers and ranchers who helped build the America we depend on. And Farm Credit is here for them, supporting rural communities and agriculture with reliable, consistent credit and financial services. In good times and bad, we provide loans to farmers and ranchers, farmer-owned cooperatives, rural homebuyers, agribusinesses, and rural infrastructure providers. We help agricultural producers feed the world. Learn more today.
Think some of sustainability to farmers just comes second nature. If you asked a farmer, are you sustainable, they'd probably look at you maybe a little funny and say, I don't think I'm doing anything that special, but it really is just what they do. We're all farmers, and our goal is taking the best care of our land, our cattle, our natural resources.
This
is my sustainability story.
About 15,000 employees have taken buyouts since President Trump took office. We asked Illinois Congressman Eric Sorensen how he thinks the cuts could impact the department and producer services.
Well, look, I mean, you talk to any producer, whether that's corn and soybeans in my district or sugar beets up in the Dakotas or cotton or any commodity, right? I have not talked to any producer that is expecting to make a good profit this year. And so now on top of that, we have cuts to the USDA, and this further burdens, and I would even go so far as to say it hurts farmers and millions of Americans that our farmers are helping to feed. We're losing access to grants today. And this is funding that upgrades farms and helps people stay in business. Also, I want to make sure that the grant funding gets to the farmer because I need the farmer to have a couple extra dollars in their pocket so that they can buy the John Deere implements that are built by union labor in East Moline, Illinois. And so I think the bottom line is the funding chaos that we're seeing right now, it adds to more uncertainty for our farmers and our producers who are making decisions now that will have to go into implementation for next year.
And the administration is doing away with any reference to climate change at USDA and across other departments. As a former meteorologist yourself, you know, what concerns you most about the scrubbing of the word climate in this work?
Well, look, I mean, these aren't scientists that are making this decision. You know, I'm the only meteorologist in Congress. I was one of the first meteorologists to actually start communicating how climate was affecting us in Northern Illinois back in 2008. I did countless talks with farmers in even dairy barns. I did a climate talk, but my talk was different because I believe that we need to understand the science to make good decisions, not politics. But here is a case where we're allowing politicians to make decisions. One of the greatest things that I've been able to do is go to family farms and see the book of data. I mean, there are giant books of data of what the high and the low temperature was on a specific day in 1942. Okay. Farmers have been paying attention to the weather for generations and generations, right? They have the record books. They see that things are changing.
And as trade concerns grow, farmers say that they're looking for additional markets for their commodities. Can new markets for biofuels make up for some of the impact of this trade war and the tariffs?
Sure. I think that is a real opportunity for us because I go back to the fact that we have been innovators in this space, in biofuels. You know, I grew up in Northern Illinois, and I remember back in the 1990s, you know, how the ethanol idea was circulating, right? And there were a lot of people that were against it at the time because they didn't know, right? I think there is always a fear of the unknown, right? But now understanding that this is a heartbeat in our district. This is a heartbeat in America, the ethanol industry. We have to make sure that as we get better and better at producing biofuels, that we're opening it up to international markets.
We'll be right back with more of our panel discussion. But first, Andrew Hunneke looks at the number of employees who have left USDA through the buyout in this week's Ag by the Numbers.
More than 15,000 USDA employees have taken buyout offers and left the department. That represents about 14% of the department's workforce. This chart breaks down the five areas of USDA that have seen the most employees leave by taking a financial incentive offer. More than 4,000 employees have left in both farm production and conservation and the Forest Service. Three other mission areas have seen losses of more than 1,000 employees: marketing and regulatory programs, research, education, and economics, and rural development. Ag Secretary Brooke Rollins says she's working to make the agency more efficient, in line with President Trump's goal of shrinking the federal workforce. She says the department usually loses about 8,000 to 10,000 employees a year from attrition. She also says the department will protect staffing levels in some key areas, including Farm Service Agency field offices. She says the department will unveil its reorganization plan next week, and it won't be as drastic as many have feared. For AgriPulse, I'm Andrew Hunneke.
Trial lawyers are using a discredited report from a World Health Organization subagency to attack a safe, American-made weed-fighting tool. This critical tool helps keep your food costs down, and without it, food inflation could double. Stand with American farmers and keep trial lawyers' greed out of our farms and food supply. Fight back. Call your local representative.
Clean Fuels Alliance America is leading the way toward cleaner air, stronger local economies, and reduced dependence on fossil fuels. The industry uses more than 1 billion pounds of soybean oil every month to produce clean fuels. Biodiesel, renewable diesel, and sustainable aviation fuel deliver immediate reductions in greenhouse gas emissions in heavy-duty transportation industries. We're growing better, cleaner fuels for today and tomorrow.
Welcome back. This week's panel discussion will focus on changes to the Agriculture Department through downsizing and how SNAP recipients and states could be affected by the House Ag Committee's reconciliation cuts. We're joined by former USDA Undersecretary Robert Bonney and Angela Rashidi with the American Enterprise Institute. Robert, we'll begin with you. Ag Secretary Brooke Rollins confirmed this week that 15,000 of the about 100,000 USDA employees are leaving the department with buyouts. How do you believe this downsizing will affect the department?
I'm really concerned about USDA. I'm concerned about the loss of really good people, senior people, people that have devoted their life to agriculture and the mission at USDA. I'm concerned about our ability to recruit new people. We obviously early on fired a bunch of the probationary employees, had to bring them back. We put a cloud over USDA. It's going to be much harder to recruit good people, good young people into the department. And we're losing some of our most important senior people. I'm very concerned about the impact that's going to have on morale, the impact to how we deliver the mission. You know, I think about things like how, after following disasters, how we have to rely on our staff, field staff, Forest Service, NRCS, FSA to deliver programs for our farmers and ranchers. We're not going to be able to deliver the same level of service. I'm frustrated with the process. I know a lot of folks are. We understand there's a plan coming out next week to talk about a reorganization. I think it's pretty simple to think that we actually ought to have the plan before we do the firings and before we push a bunch of people out of the organization.
Secretary Rollins insists that the department is, you know, protecting these services to farmers and moving staff closer to them. Specifically, how do you think farmers and producers will be impacted by these cuts, and how could their services be affected?
Well, I can tell you from experience, take Hurricane Helene. After Hurricane Helene, I traveled to several of the affected states. In that instance, and in every other instance post-disaster, we're just normal day-to-day USDA operations. I never had a farmer complain that there were too many staff in the office. Had a lot of folks complain that they needed more that our staff needed help. And we tried to do a lot to both bring in more people and actually pay the young people more so they could make a living out of it. There's no question that this is going to impact our ability, USDA's ability to deliver programs. There's no question. Our ability on the conservation side to deliver technical assistance, to partner with hunting and fishing groups and others, is going to be severely impacted. Our ability to deliver disaster programs. I'm really concerned about the firefighting operation in the Forest Service. We are losing senior staff that help to manage those wildfires. We're losing young people that hold red cards that actually go out and do the firefighting. We're losing people that do the forest management on the front end. The impacts of the Forest Service, NRCS, Farm Service Agency, APHIS, are going to be enormous. And I don't think the Secretary of the Trump administration has thought this through.
And Angela, when we look at the biggest topics in Congress right now, the House Ag Committee has been instructed to make $230 billion in cuts, which will likely come from the SNAP program. How are these cuts going to affect people that rely on SNAP to themselves and affect individuals and affect their families?
Well, I think it's important to kind of understand the context that these cuts are being discussed. And so it's about $230 billion over 10 years, so about $23 billion per year. And we're talking about a program that has grown tremendously over the past couple of decades. In terms of expenditures, it's over $100 billion per year now. In constant dollars, that's about 100% more than it was even a decade again. So expenditures have really doubled in the last decade. And so I think that it's important to really think about how has this program grown and are there opportunities to make cuts from the perspective of being good stewards of public dollars and ensuring that dollars that are dedicated towards nutrition are being used wisely. And so when the question comes up, well, how is this going to affect families? I think that there's a lot of opportunities to really target this program to those who are most in need, address things that have, things like fraud, abuse, areas where this program maybe is not as efficient as it could be, so that then families can be better served.
We'll be back with more of our panel discussion right after this.
I think some of sustainability to farmers just comes second nature. If you asked a farmer, are you sustainable, they'd probably look at you maybe a little funny and say, I don't think I'm doing anything that special, but it really is just what they do. We're all farmers, and our goal is taking the best care of our land, our cattle, our natural resources.
This
is my sustainability story.
It's not as simple as just to wake up one day and go, I want to be a conservation farmer. You're changing how your farming practice is done. You're changing your operation.
Farm Credit supported John and Kelly Watley as they shifted to more sustainable farming, improving the environment where they farm and live. Learn more at farmcredit.com/climate.
Welcome back. One of the most challenging issues for Republicans in reconciliation is the proposal to require states to help pay for the SNAP program. We asked Angela Rashidi with the American Enterprise Institute if states have the capacity to handle the additional expense.
The financial kind of infrastructure, the way SNAP is designed, is that the benefits are 100% federally funded. And so I have argued and others have argued that this is a tremendous incentive for states to actually expand the program. And there's very little incentive for states to constrain costs and do things that can prevent fraud, for example. And so the idea behind having states have some sort of financial skin in the game is because states actually administer this program, meaning they determine you know, what households are eligible. And it's really their responsibility to try to constrain costs. And yet there's no incentive for them to do that. The entire incentive of the program is to get as many people on benefits as possible, because states have been told that's how you get more federal dollars into your state. And so I think the idea behind increasing the share that states have to contribute is that then they will take more care in determining eligibility. They'll take more care in implementing existing work requirements, for example. And all of that will provide the incentive that states need to constrain costs and, again, ensure that those SNAP dollars are being spent appropriately.
And Robert, turning back to you, the Department of Government Efficiency is now approving farm loans over $500,000. You know, do you think this is a good or a bad idea, you know, to have that extra checkbox, the extra box to check on USDA loans?
I think it's a terrible idea. And I think one of the things that's really important for people to understand about agriculture, and obviously people listening to this program know that, but timing matters. Farmers are getting loans for land purchases. They're getting loans for seed inputs, all kinds of things. And timing matters. And the more you do to slow it down and allow people who know nothing about agriculture — Elon Musk doesn't know the first thing about agriculture, his minions over at the White House don't know anything — involving them is going to slow things down. It's going to make it more difficult for U.S. agriculture. One of the things we tried to do in the last administration was to empower our people on the ground to work with farmers, to provide better terms for loans, to get more people into agriculture and to get them in a financially sustainable way. And I really worry that this is going to undermine agriculture at a time when input prices are going up, where crop prices are going down because of the trade war, and farmers don't need more financial strain.
Angela, some states have launched pilot programs limiting SNAP purchases on sugary drinks, for example. How could these restrictions impact the SNAP program?
The Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program is designed to improve nutrition. And we have evidence to suggest that a lot of SNAP dollars are being used on foods like sugary beverages that have no nutritional value and actually are contributing to chronic disease and poor health that is, you know, a public health crisis in this country. So I think states are rightly looking for creative ways to try to address health issues among their populations, as well as ensuring that public dollars that are earmarked towards SNAP, towards improving nutrition, actually do improve nutrition.
We'll be back with more AgriPulse Newsmakers. But first, Andrew Hunneke looks at the current state of soybean processing plants across the country in this week's Map It Out.
The number of soybean processing plants across the country has been quickly expanding, largely because of the demand for biofuels. This map from the American Soybean Association shows the number of soybean processing plants in the U.S. Those with dark blue circles started before 2023, the light blue circles are for plants started in 2023 and 2024, and the green circles represent plants opening in the future. The larger the circle, the more daily crushing capacity the plant has. According to data from the American Soybean Association, the domestic capacity of the industry has increased by 14% from the beginning of 2023 to the beginning of this year. Since 2023, 9 new or expanded plants have come online, while 7 more are expected over the next 6 years. If all those plants are built, ASA estimates domestic crush capacity will increase by 22% in 2030 over 2023. For AgriPulse, I'm Andrew Hunneke.
Trial lawyers are using a discredited report from a World Health Organization subagency to attack a safe, American-made weed-fighting tool. This critical tool helps keep your food costs down, and without it, food inflation could double. Stand with American farmers and keep trial lawyers' greed out of our farms and food supply. Fight back. Call your local representative.
Clean Fuels Alliance America is leading the way toward cleaner air, stronger local economies, and reduced dependence on fossil fuels. The industry uses more than 1 billion pounds of soybean oil every month to produce clean fuels. Biodiesel, renewable diesel, and sustainable aviation fuel deliver immediate reductions in greenhouse gas emissions in heavy-duty transportation industries. We're growing better, cleaner fuels for today and tomorrow.
Thanks for joining us for another episode of AgriPulse Newsmakers. Here's what's on the horizon for next week. The House Ag Committee will mark up their portion of the budget reconciliation bill beginning on Tuesday. The Senate Ag Committee will hold a hearing Tuesday focused on perspectives from the field about conservation. And the Consumer Price Index will be released on Tuesday. Plus, sign-up is open for the AgriPulse Food and Ag Issue Summit in Sacramento, California. On June 10th, you can gain insights on water issues, the ag economy, and perspectives from the California Capitol, from industry leaders and lawmakers. To sign up, visit the Events tab on our website. For AgriPulse, I'm Lydia Johnson. Thanks for watching.
Newsmakers is a production of AgriPulse Communications. You can also find our new content on YouTube and wherever you get your podcasts. And don't forget to follow AgriPulse and our correspondents on social media to get breaking news and more. For agriculture, trade, food, environment, and regulatory news, your source is AgriPulse.com.